Case on the docket, Carla Weich Lewis versus the Commonwealth of Virginia, Mr. Hall and Mr. Campbell. Mr. Hall, nice to see you again.
Yes, sir.
Would you like to reserve any of your time for rebuttal?
I would, if it pleases the court, reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
And you've heard my speech on the clock, so...
I have, yes, sir. Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Dan Hall, and I'm court-appointed counsel for Carla Lewis on this appeal. Sole issue granted was the question of whether or not the trial court abused its discretion by ordering $58,000 worth of restitution in this case. And I must confess that as I looked at this to argue this today, I said to myself, why did the court grant this writ? And I think the reason the court granted this writ is because the question raised is an evidentiary question. And that's why we have to start with acknowledging for the purpose of this hearing that Ms. Lewis is guilty of grand larceny. So then the question is, was the evidence sufficient under the burden required to prove the restitution amount? We agree with the Commonwealth that the McCulloch case, the Siegler case, and the Deal case are all completely relevant to this issue. But I think what all of those cases show this court is that the broad discretion given to a judge in sentencing is narrowed by restitution, because sentencing ranges, the Deal case talks about sentencing ranges, it's as broad as the statute. As broad as what the General Assembly says, but restitution is evidentiarily linked by the requirement that it be related to the loss. No burglar alarms installed after the fact, because that's not related to the loss. And it also has to be proven by a burden. They call it quasi-civil and say it's a preponderance of the evidence, which means that discretion is not complete. It's based on evidence. And so McCulloch, in particular, each of those cases says in their own way that the evidence for restitution can come from trial or sentencing. And I think that's what caught McCulloch on appeal, was that they proved only the misdemeanor amount at the trial because of the evidentiary issues in a trial.
As I understand your argument, it is not that the evidence failed to establish that the victim had more than $58,054.80 of stuff taken. It's that the evidence, even viewed in a preponderance, wasn't sufficient to establish that your client took all of it.
Judge Russell, that's exactly it. And took what would justify that order. And again, this is a curious case where the judge dispensed with any evidence concerning all of this jewelry and took the insurance claim. And we can acknowledge, like in the Siegler case, that the insurance claim had been submitted with a list of lost items. But when you have to look even at a preponderance of the evidence, and that really wasn't what was raised in McCulloch, Siegler, or Deal. Did they prove that Carla Lewis, the victim said, replace the silver with fake silver? Where's the evidence that she did that?
But Mike, you will concede that given the posture we're in, and I realize,
yes,
having been here the last time you were arguing this case,
I
recognize that you had an argument on the sufficiency of the taking of the silver.
Yes.
But in the posture we're in now, the evidence was satisfactory beyond a reasonable doubt to prove she took the jewelry that she pawned, and also the silver that she pawned. So we have,
I agree.
Given where we are, the evidence is sufficient to support that she took portions of the missing items. And setting aside the jewelry for a moment, although the judge referred to it as almost being worth $54,000,
right,
given that she pawned some of the silver, doesn't that give rise to the permissible inference that she took all of the missing silver?
I don't think so. And again, let's compare that to the Deal case, where you had, and I don't know what the exact record was in Deal, but you had someone embezzling on a monthly basis from an employer, and you've got to assume that in an embezzlement case, there was proof that no one else had their hand in the pot. That's a classic part of what you have to prove in embezzlement. And so they didn't prove that amount that they showed at sentencing, and yet at sentencing they were able to get testimony from the witness to how much was taken in total. And that testimony supported the restitution amount because all they needed at trial was $200. What we're saying here is there was ample evidence of other people having access to this, so we can't escape the question of proof in the case. And again, they certainly proved that she was in the loan shop with those items. There's a picture of her there. She pawned them. But did they prove even by preponderance of evidence that she took $58,000 worth of silver? I think that they have not.
On the beyond the reason, thank you for acknowledging the preponderance standard, but we even have cases that say under the beyond a reasonable doubt standard, if X number of items are missing from my home, and we'll treat the jewelry and the silver separately, that a bunch of silver is missing from my home, and I find you in possession of some of that silver, that gives rise to a permissible inference beyond a reasonable doubt that you took all of it, doesn't it?
It can.
Okay.
I acknowledge there are those cases.
All right. Given that, and given that we are now no longer dealing with a beyond a reasonable doubt standard, we're only dealing with a preponderance standard, why isn't the fact that it is conclusively established for our purposes that she stole some of the silver, that she didn't take all of the missing silver?
Well, I think that you've got to look at two things. One, the question is whether or not it's related to what she took. And I know that sounds like I'm dodging it, but I think that's what the question is. Is it separate than the proof beyond a reasonable doubt? The two things are different. And again, at trial, I don't think we established that she took all of that. So it is circular to some extent. I'll acknowledge that, Judge Russell. It's a circular argument. But the question here is also, though, really there was no testimony at sentencing about the value of these things. It had been submitted at trial. It wasn't submitted again at sentencing. And I think there is a question here when you look at a judge's discretion. Why didn't the judge order restitution from some of the missing jewelry when that's really what they showed that she took? And I think that's the question before the court. Okay. I'll just yield the rest of my time.
Do you want to save it for rebuttal, or are you
done? I can. Yes, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Campbell.
Good afternoon.
May it please the court, my name is Aaron Campbell, and I represent the Commonwealth in this case. We would submit that the trial court did not abuse its discretion and that the amount of restitution was proved by the preponderance of the evidence presented at both trial and sentencing, and that it was reasonable in relation to the offense of grand larceny. Opposing counsel correctly pointed out that the restitution is not limited to evidence that is presented simply at trial. It could be evidence presented at trial and at the sentencing hearing, and that comes from the McCullough case. That was a situation where the Commonwealth failed to prove a fraud of $200 at trial beyond a reasonable doubt, but once it got to the sentencing, the Commonwealth was able to prove the restitution amount of, I can't remember if it was like over $5,000, and this court said that that was perfectly reasonable and within the court's discretion.
In the way the court entered its order, and it, since it was a bench, we have no idea as to what actual items the trial court concluded she took beyond a reasonable doubt. Isn't that fair? I mean, all we know is it's worth more than two. I mean, the one judge order that grants the one issue but denies the other basically says she got over $2,500 from the pawn shop, so we know that she stole more than $200 worth of stuff. That's enough for grand larceny. Huh. But we don't know what items the trial court actually found the evidence supported that she took other than those items, do we?
I'm trying to understand your question. The judge went with the insurance amount.
We know what he did at restitution, but as far as the conviction order at the guilt phase,
okay,
she took these items without permission. We don't know what he found that she took. The Commonwealth put in lots of evidence of various things that she may have took, and we know that the trial court accepted some portion of them and that their value was more than $200.
Yes, Your Honor. He did not specify that you took the silver, you took the jewelry, you took the clothing, etc.
Does there have to be an underlying finding that she actually took the silver to order restitution based on the worth of the silver?
I don't think so. I think that the court can simply look at the evidence that was presented at the trial and the sentencing and come up with the restitution amount. I don't think there has to be a specific finding. And
well, if there, at least implicit. I mean, yeah. If the trial court said had actually said, I found her guilty because she pawned the jewelry and the baby silver, I didn't even consider the rest of the stuff, that's what I found her guilty of taking, that's what the evidence established. You couldn't then have a restitution order about things that the court found that the evidence didn't support that she took.
I would probably, yeah, that probably would be correct. If we have an explicit ruling that were, that I only find that she took these specific items, then certainly I don't think you could say that there was an inference that she took other items. But we don't have that in this case. What we do have is the Commonwealth presenting evidence of all the items that she took. On page 37 and 38 of the appendix, the victim had generated a list of items that she submitted to her insurance, and that was submitted as an exhibit in this case.
And Exhibit 1 did not include any of the items that were recovered from the pawn shop. They were all items that had gone missing and were not returned, correct?
Right. These were all the items that had gone missing and that were not returned. In the Alger case, this court said that payment by insurance company may reflect the value of true loss. And that's what we have in this case, is that this victim generated a list of the items that was missing and submitted to the insurance company, and there was a payment from the insurance company. I think that the trial court does not abuse its discretion in deciding to go with what the insurance company paid out as evidence of the loss that the victim incurred in this case. I'd also point out that this case is very similar to the Sigler case. In that case, there was the victim had submitted an itemized list of items and presented it to the insurance company. This court has said that list bears some indicia of reliability. In this case, we have on page 168 and 169 of the appendix, defense counsel telling the court that you should look at the exhibits that were put at trial as the value of what was the loss in this case, and that the court should look at those. And what the trial court did in this case, apparently, is look at the values that were presented as exhibits in the Commonwealth's case in chief, especially on appendix pages 214 through 215, which is that list of items that was not the jewelry that the victim had reported stolen.
The best the evidence get that she took the silver that was subject to the Chubb statement is that she stole some of the silver, and it's the inference that if she took part of it, she took all. It's reasonable to conclude she took all of it.
Yeah, there's part of that. There was silver recovered from the pawn shop, so there is an inference that if she took some of it, she took all of it. But also, we also had the testimony from Miss Mesa, the other housekeeper, who said that she saw the defendant not only take bags of items from the home, but also had received statements from the defendant that she does take items from this home, which. And we also have her testimony that she did not take anything from the home, and the judge did not find her testimony credible. I'd finally just point out that it appeared what the trial court was doing was it was looking at the evidence and noting that the amount of jewelry was more than what the Commonwealth was really asking for, and I think the court was trying to come up with an equitable ruling in this case, and I think, you know, given that circumstance, I think the court was well within its discretion in ordering the restitution amount that it did order. Unless the court has any questions, I would ask that the court affirm the judgment below.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell.
Thank you.
Mr. Hall?
Just briefly, Judge Russell, I think there is a lingering concern that the court may have been doing some equity here. I can acknowledge that, but I think that what the Commonwealth said is so overly broad that the discretion to order this restitution is so broad, and they cite the Siegler case, but what's notable about that case is in Siegler, there were a number of breaking and enterings, and the witness came and itemized the items and the value and the fact that she'd submitted them as an insurance claim. And the Court of Appeals said that because she gave that value and submitted it as an insurance claim, it was credible evidence. And in this case, you just had the insurance claim, and she didn't testify to that. So I asked the court to see the difference in this. And I think what the court said about the order, not itemizing what Ms. Lewis was responsible for, is the nub of this. And for that reason, we ask you to grant the writ in reverse. Thank you.
We'll come down.